Welcome back to the Haven Homestead Podcast, where we learn and grow together on our way to living more sustainable lives. My name is Chris, and this is episode 34. Today we're going to be talking about my favorite homesteading book. But before we get to that, I want to remind you to head on out to havenhomestead.com. That's www.havenhomestead.com, where you can find all about everything that we have going on tomorrow. On Saturday, we have a chicken care class. I'm sorry that I'm tardy getting this episode out. I mean to get them out by Tuesday, but I just had way too much going on this week. I just was not able to get it done. So we're doing a Friday episode, and I will post it tonight as well. But tomorrow, the 14th of October 2017, we're having a class, chicken care class, what we're doing, chicken raising and processing, respectful harvest. So that's what we're going to be doing tomorrow. We already have 6 people signed up. There were going to be 8, but we had 2 people, a couple, canceled. It was a conflict of schedule, so they weren't able to come out, but we're excited because we're having a class tomorrow, and it seems like we have a pretty decent group number participating, so I'm pretty excited about that. Also, please consider heading out to our Patreon page. That is www.patreon.com/havenhomestead, and there you can find our Patreon blog posts and the things that we do there, and is also a place that you can get some of that exclusive content by becoming one of our patrons. And to become a patron, you just sign up and pledge a certain amount. You can choose between 1 and not sure what the highest tier is that I've made. I've played around with making different sized tiers, but I think $500 is the biggest one or something. 1, 3, 5, 10, 20, $30 are all. With at $30 tier, you get a t-shirt. $10 and up, you get a mug or a spurtle. Anyway, there's a rewards that we send out for those, for patrons. And it's a really good way to keep this podcast going and help us attain some of our goals of being self-sustainable. And last but definitely not least, a word from our sponsor. Take it away, Lindsay.
Vic Zatteray and his team at Happy Leaf LED are changing the way growers think about grow lights. Happy Leaf LED is no joke lighting technology that really works. The lights are affordable, powerful, and efficient. With their Anywhere Anytime garden kits, they'll change the way you think about hydroponics too. For more information on Happy Leaf LED, go to happyleafled.com. You'll be happy you did.
Now, we are going to get into our main topic at hand, and that is my favorite homesteading book. And it is called The Self-Sufficient Life and How to Live It by John Seymour. It is published by DK Publishing, and you can get a copy of it for a little over $20 on Amazon for a new copy, or, you know, $15 or $17 or something like that for a used copy. You know, the price difference is so small that I would go for a new one. That way you make sure you don't have somebody else's markings and things in there. So let's get right into some of my favorite parts about this book. Right in the very beginning, in chapter 1, it's entitled The Meaning of Self-Sufficiency. And in it he talks about, like, some of the sections are the way to self-sufficiency, humans and the environment, the natural cycle, the seasons, and then it gets into some of my things I like. So I'm a certified permaculture designer, and I really like to look at designs that people put together on homesteads or farms or just permaculture sites, because I like to see how they plan the flow of traffic, the human flow, how close the you know, the animals that make the manure or the fertilizer is to the garden and the compost. And I just like to look at those things and learn from them and get my own ideas on my designs that I do. But in here, starting on page 26, there's 10 chapters. So, I mean, it goes to 388 pages before it gets into the contacts and references section. So, I mean, there's that much content in here, plus the context of references and glossary and index and acknowledgments, and then all the stuff at the beginning, like the preface and forewords and stuff like that, introduction. So, I mean, there's a lot in, you know, nearly 400 pages that he has to teach in here. And some of the sections are small, but what he does give detail, he gives, you know, a lot of detail into some of these things. So anyhow, what I was saying was the urban garden. So page 26, I mean, really near the beginning of the book, he has the urban garden, and it just has ideas for someone who doesn't have a lot of land, that if they're just fixing up their backyard or you know, they're really limited on their land, like we talked about in one of our previous episodes, then this is a really good section to look at, because he has some really nice ideas for, like, fruit trees, keeping them small through the espalier. And I guess maybe it's like espalier, maybe it's a French word, I'm not sure. But uses vertical space, so use things that climb, you know, that can be supported by twine or wires. You know, getting runner beans runner beans instead of bush beans. You know, stuff like that. Things that take limited square feet but can climb, and have a little beehive in there. Have a little composting bin. You know, maybe some raised beds if you just have a little tiny backyard. The next section he does is the community garden. When we lived in Pocatello, that was what some of our friends were interested in, was their community garden plot, if they, you know, lived in apartments and stuff. So he had another little plan here on how to have a very productive in a small space. And then he goes on to do a one acre and a 5 acre farm. And I really, really like it. It's really neat to see the way the different things are shaped. And there might be a few things that I wouldn't do. He's from England, and he did some work in Africa, John Seymour did. And so I think that his paradigm is a little different than Americans, in that he has, on the 5 acre farm, he has, I think it was, it might be the 1 acre, but he had the barn attached to the house with the cow standing in there. And I don't know many wives that would allow, I know my wife wouldn't allow me to have the cow living in a building attached to the house, just because of the smell and flies and stuff like that. So there's a little bit of difference in some of the way that these are planned. It was in the one, sorry if you hear me turning pages and stuff. It was in the one acre deal. So he had a 1 acre plan, 1 acre farm. He had the cow in the cow shed, which is attached to the tool shed, which is a kind of attached to the house, or maybe just, you know, really close to the house. And I don't think that would fly around these parts, not with my wife. So I would have to think of something a little bit different. But I like to look at the way he put different things. And I used a little bit of the inspiration on that on the design that I'm currently working on for a client. So now we get chapter 2, and I'm not going to go as in-depth to all of the chapters, because some of the chapters aren't interesting to me. Like chapter 8 is brewing and winemaking. It's not really my interest. But in chapter 2, he talks about food from the garden and talks about how to make some of the garden beds, how to get some of the stuff, you know, prepared for your planting or growing, and different parts of the plant, a little bit of agronomy. There's just a lot of really good parts in chapter 2 about food from the garden. You know, about what you should do in each part of the year, how you should set up your greenhouse, or, you know, some suggestions on setting up a greenhouse. In this book, it has 100 pages from another book that he wrote, which is called The New Self-Sufficient Gardener. And in chapter 2, it, I believe, has those 100 pages from that book. But in it, he talks about fruits, talks about green manure crops, like that means plants that you would chop and drop to compost in place, or compost, you know. So I don't know why they call it manure, but it's just green compost that you put on top, and then it just deteriorates in place. Talks about vegetables, herbs, fruits, fruit trees, and keeping vegetables in the winter, and anyway, all that stuff. So chapter 2, I find, is a very good for those of us searching for self-sustainability in a vegetable, you know, through the vet through plants. There are so many areas to self-sustainability that I think a lot of times people just focus on the garden, but there's a lot more to it. And in this book, he kind of covers it all, really. I don't know how many times I've opened this book to find out about something, and he usually has it in there. And then chapter 3, about food from animals. So you can, you know, the cow, the goats, the pigs, the sheep, the poultry, the rabbits, bees, and honey. He has a section on each one of these that I find very good. You know, like on the rabbits, he doesn't have very many breeds, but he has some good breeds. The goats, he, I think he only puts 2 breeds in. You know, it's like there are so many different breeds of animals, and they each have an attribute that makes them more useful than maybe another one. But he's just the I think the idea for this is that having a pig is better than having, you know, some special Cooney Cooney breed or whatever. Having a pig and having that ability to make the bacon and the ham and adds another level to your sustainability, to your self-reliance. Then in chapter 4, talks about food from the fields and about clearing, draining, irrigating your land, making the use of woodland, of your woodland on your acreage, fencing or making hedges. The using horsepower, like a real horse, animal horse, using your tractor, harvesting, you know, the wheat, the rye, the barley, the corn, all of these things, he just covers in maybe not great detail, but at least introduction. Then in chapter 5, we talk about food from the wild, like your game birds and your big game like deer and elk. He also in that chapter about from the food from the wild talks about fish. I mean, we live here in Western Washington, which there's a lot of rivers, a lot of lakes, a lot of creeks, and there's a lot of fish. So fishing is a big deal around here. Plus, we also have the ocean not too far away. There's lots and lots of another thing that we have here, lots and lots of berries, salmon berries, elderberries, huckleberries, blackberries in just droves, and plus there's lots of other, you know, ones that I didn't mention, but and some that aren't edible. But this has been useful. This book has been useful in those terms as well, and also has talks a little about mushrooms. Then in chapter 6 we get about into the dairy, which is talking about making butter and cream, making cheese, probably how to milk a cow, just taking care of your livestock. Chapter 7 is about the kitchen. Some of the ideas that he has, you can tell that he has experience in this arena because, for instance, the very first section in the kitchen section is the north-facing storeroom. Now, why would you want to have a north-facing storeroom? Because that's the coolest part here. If you live in the northern hemisphere, that is the coolest part of your house, because the sun will shine on the south side, so you want to put your storeroom on the north side. You know, just things like that that people might not think about. And we put our pantry on the north side. I just thinking that it wasn't necessarily on purpose and not because you read this book, but it just made sense because it was next to the kitchen. But I'm glad that it worked out that way. We still have a lot of things to learn and to think about. He talks about harvesting and storing your food, making bread, preserving, freezing, canning, which I would think that the storing, preserving, and canning were all the same thing, but they're in different sections. So maybe he talks about, you know, salting things and stuff like that. They also pickling, jams, baking, preserving your meats, fish, and vegetables. In chapter 8, brewing and wine making, he talks about brewing basics, malting barley, making beer, making wine, making hard cider and vinegar, which I can see that would be, we've made vinegar before, and it's a useful thing to have. Plus, you gain a skill when you make it. It's not hard, and it's interesting, and it's very useful. Then chapter 9, energy and waste, food for the garden. The dry toilet is one of the sections in there, compost toilet. So talks about managing waste, saving energy, getting power from water, getting heat from the sun, getting power from the wind, and fuel from waste. So there is a lot of good things about energy usage in here. I mean, he's definitely been around the corner, or around the block, as it were, I guess. Is that the right way to say that? He's been around a few times, and he understands the necessity of some of these things about using all the waste. We've had a bad burn ban around here lately. Now we're starting to get more rain. It's going to be lifted soon. But I think being able to heat with burning your garbage and stuff like that would be very useful, in especially people that get a lot of junk mail, because if you throw it into the dumpster, then it goes to the landfill, and there's so much plastic, you know, the little windows on the envelopes and things like that that just add up. The paper might decompose, but there's so many other things that just won't go away for a long time. And I think there's got to be a better way to get rid of that. That's what the fuel from waste reminded me of. Now, chapter 10, which is the last chapter, talks about crafts and skills. And I was just kind of looking at that section before I started recording, and it talks about the workshop. And he says you don't have to have a very big workshop as long as it is well organized. And the number one rule in a workshop should be put the tool back, because tools have a tendency to walk off. And he says the number one rule in your woodshop should be, or your workshop should be, put the tool where it goes, or put the tool back, or something like that. So I like that, and I would like to have a more organized workshop for sure. But he discovers a few more sections I'll go over. I cover building, about having springs, like how to keep a spring clean, and a little bit of plumbing. He does knots and rope work, some basketry, some pottery, spinning wool and cotton, dyeing and weaving, spinning flax, curing and tanning hides or leather, making bricks and tiles, working in stone, working in metal, building and thatching, scything, woodworking, household items, making a pond and fish farming, the all-purpose furnace, becoming a self-supporter. When I was looking at it, he was talking about how to sharpen a scythe, how to, you know, sharpen other tools, maybe the tools that you would have, what they're called, and why you need them for whatever the job was. There's so many things on this life, this path to sustainability, that we've learned that have been such a valuable lessons to us. And I hope that as we've gone through this year so far, I mean, we're 10 months into the podcast, that I hope that you have found things that were useful here that help you in your self-sustainability. I also want to say thank you to Amy for commenting on the website. She wrote on there that she is starting, she really liked the business review, and it inspired her to work harder, I guess, on her on her stuff, and I wish you the best of luck and hope that you are met with success. And if there's anything that us here at Haven Homestead can help you with, don't hesitate to ask. Once again, I hope that you have found something useful in this, and go out and get this book, The Self-Sufficient Life and How to Live It, and also visit our sponsor at happyleafled.com, and come on out to havenhomestead.com and visit us. So with that, this has been the Haven Homestead Podcast, where we learn and grow together on our way to living more sustainable lives. Thanks for listening.